Good afternoon, everybody. We'll call this meeting of the House Resources Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is now 1:07 p.m. Friday, February 25, 2022. Here with us developing a quorum is Representative Fields, Representative Hopkins, Representative Hannon, Representative Shragi, and myself, Representative Putkadup. I believe the others are en route, so hopefully they'll trickle in. I'd like to say thank you to our recording secretary, Robin, and our LIO moderator, Leo. Folks, please silence their cell phone. On today's agenda, we've got House Concurrent Resolution Number 4, urging the establishment of Office of Outdoor Equity by Representative Tarr. Joining her is Mr. Song to provide backup to the song and dance of the resolution. This is our first hearing on the resolution. Representative Tarr, if you can come to the table, introduce the bill, introduce your staff, and we'll move along with your presentation, any questions, and then bounce over to invited testimony.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Representative Garen Tarr from District 18 in Anchorage.
David Song, staff Representative Tarr.
And thank you to David, who's been working really hard on this resolution. We're excited to present this resolution to you today, urging the governor to establish an Office of Outdoor Equity. And just sort of for orientation, the reason it's a concurrent resolution, right? We have joint resolutions, concurrent resolutions, or simple House resolutions, but this one is a concurrent resolution is more when the legislature is speaking to the governor, and so that's why this is in that form. So why we wanted to work on this. Alaskans love the outdoors. These are just some fun photos of us getting out and enjoying the outdoors. 81% of Alaska residents participate in outdoor recreation each year. And this quote from the state parks director about increased use during 2020, of course, there's been a lot of conversation about the COVID-19 pandemic and the impacts on mental health from being isolated and not being able to, you know, do some of the activities that we normally do. But one thing that made us lucky in Alaska was just the opportunities to get outside. You know, so many people you talk to say that was critical to my mental health, to my wellness during this difficult time. And I just wanted to share a quote from the Journal of Rehabilitation Research and Development that says, spending time outdoors can lead to reduced PTSD and stress, improved concentration, and promoting overall well-being. So we even know that scientifically that experience is being substantiated, right? We feel it, but we know through the research too. But we know that access historically has not been universal, and that's what brings us to having this resolution today, because we want every Alaskan to be able to hunt, fish, hike, camp, birdwatch, walk, run, view animals, snow machine, ski, kayak, raft, find solitude and well-being, and enjoy all the special places that Alaska has to offer. And, of course, that's not even a comprehensive list, right? We just figured that covered enough of the amazing outdoor opportunities that we have here as Alaskans. So this resolution calls for the governor to establish this Office of Outdoor Equity in the Department of Natural Resources. And it also requests through this office that the governor would make available grants to organizations in the state that are working to improve access to the state's outdoor resources, especially in communities that have historically been excluded from outdoor recreation and subsistence activities. And we're going to hear from Representative Rubio and a great success story from New Mexico. But just wanted to share, you know, the vision here is not that this has to be entirely state funded. The example from New Mexico and we'll see elsewhere is that they're public-private partnerships. And again, what we can accomplish sometimes is, you know, these great collaborations and partnerships that will increase access. And while we do have great programs, we know that they're, we have hunter education programs. We have some other programs that are trying to help people. I know even in some communities, gas cards are given to people, to help and get out for hunting, for example, if that, is a limit for someone's access. So, you know, those programs exist. We just know they're in high demand and that there's an unmet need for those. Also, the U.S. government started tracking the economic impact of the outdoor recreation industry. And we know in Alaska, it's a $2.2 billion industry. So when we think about, the opportunity for public-private partnerships, those dollars suggest that there's some opportunity there. This resolution doesn't specifically, speak to just more access for children, but that, is an important part of it, particularly when we think about, again, the mental health and what we've experienced over the last couple of years. But important to us is just the research that shows us that, if you're exposed to the outdoors as a child, then you're much more likely, you know, to take that experience into adulthood. And that, you know, similar, you know, then the flip side of that is that if you weren't, right, then, you know, you're not nearly as comfortable. And so just looking at hunting as one example, when I was on the resources committee, you know, this was something that came up because, as I'm sure people know, you know, some of the, when we buy ammunition, for example, or some of the firearm equipment, you know, there's a surcharge on that that goes to conservation programs. So when we have fewer participants in these programs, then, you know, we're potentially compromising the ability of those programs to exist going into the future. And so, for example, just looking here, you know, we see that the third line there, right, just comparing 2016 to 2011 to 1982, the article we found suggested that 1982 was kind of a peak number of hunters in the United States at 17 million. But then more recently, you know, we've seen a drop down to 11.5 million hunters. And so when we look at the younger age groups, you know, we're seeing that 25 to 34 age group is reduced, and then also a similar reduction in the 18 to 24 year old age group. So, again, you know, thinking about sort of what kind of experiences that young people have, what we found with this other research is it's not for lack of interest, but often for lack of access. And so, again, you know, that's what we want to speak to in this resolution. And this next slide sort of talks about things that are probably obvious if we just stop and think about it for a second. But, you know, what are some of our barriers to getting outside? Cost, transportation, experience, lack of gear, safety, historical exclusion. My first few summers in Alaska, I was actually a guide, and it was a really fun experience. But also, you know, encountering people at these different levels of their own experience, and, you know, just trying to get people feeling comfortable. You know, actually worked for a company where we did trips for women only, and that was specifically because, you know, a lot of women hadn't had those experiences growing up and felt really uncomfortable and intimidated by the idea of, you know, going on a 5-day backpacking trip. So, you know, there's that, you know, just lack of experience can be one part of it, right? Didn't come from a family where anybody exposed you to that. So now, you know, you want to learn how to do it, but you just, like, where do you turn? Who do you go to? But others, like cost and transportation, are frequently cited as reasons that people are not, you know, visiting parks or, you know, getting out. We've had such demand for our cabins that in the most, you know, last couple of years, they've actually increased and done sort of higher pricing, which I understand is to meet the demand, right? So some of them are a little higher priced than others that are, like, less popular. But again, if cost is already, you know, something that might be limiting your access, you know, as we do things like that, that might, you know, further limit the access for folks. So again, some of these things are pretty obvious, but we just wanted to put it on the paper because when you think about it and you start adding up the dollars, it's like, okay, camping equipment. Okay, I need a sleeping bag. I need, you know, a sleeping pad. I need a tent. I need tarps, you know, whatever kind of camp cookware, right? And it's just like ching, 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 right? It just adds up. And then, you know, people have bigger families, right? You know, that makes it, even for something that may be a lower cost experience, right? You start adding up all the gear for those.
You point at me at the bigger families.
Thinking of you with the three little ones, right? I'm sure all of that, you know, can quickly add up. So in considering this, Alaska would not be unique. This is actually a growing movement. And in fact, this is really how I learned about this, is that Colorado back in 2015, I want to say was the first state that I learned about. And some we'll see you're doing, you know, offices of outdoor recreation, outdoor recreation task force, and then also this equity piece is getting brought into it. So it's, you know, sort of can be situated in a few different ways. But across the country, you know, and especially in the West Coast, which makes a lot of sense because we're, you know, very lucky to have beautiful lands on this side of the country that we really enjoy, and you know, more lands to access. And again, then just with what other states are doing, you know, to show, you know, that previous slide is sort of what's already happened to date as we sit here talking about this. But then now, you know, in this current legislative session, the group that we work with is tracking this. And, you know, there are at least 69 pieces of legislation across the country that would, you know, either increase, open an office of outdoor recreation. Some are called outdoor education. Some are called outdoor equity. But really all, you know, kind of under this goal of finding ways in these public-private partnerships to meet the need and remove some of those barriers to access. And so it's an exciting opportunity. And I think, you know, the folks that we have lined up as the invited testimony, We'll give you, you know, specific examples in the work that they're doing. And the last point I wanted to mention is that this also speaks to indigenous place names and some of that historical, you know, misinformation or lack of recognition. And I think, you know, that could be woven into the work that's done here in terms of the educational opportunity. So that is all we have to open up the introduction to the resolution. Are welcome to answer any questions. And then, of course, very excited about the folks we have to provide invited testimony.
Okay, any questions from members? Representative Hopkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative, for bringing this forward. And it's something that we, like you said, Alaska has certainly a need for. Maybe this would be a question for the invited testimony, people that have done this in other states, and especially the New Mexico representative we've got on there. But this is looking mostly at racial and social disparities. It's not doesn't mention disability access and disability support for trying to, you know, find access to the outdoors as well. Is there a reason, or in other states, have they included that?
Through the chair to Representative Hopkins, yes, because in some of the materials I have read that, and I appreciate you noticing and acknowledging that that I think is an oversight on our part and should be part of the consideration for sure.
Well, maybe I'll work on a little tweak for that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any other questions from members before we move to invited testimony? Seeing or hearing none, Representative Tarr, any specific order you'd like to have folks speak?
Yes, we thought we might have Rep. Rubio go first, and then Lee, and then Diana.
Representative Rubio.
Great. Good afternoon, everyone. So my name is Angelica Rubio. Thank you for the invitation to participate in the conversation today. I serve as the state representative for the city of Las Cruces, New Mexico. This is my sixth year serving in the legislature. And fortunately for us, unlike you all, we just got done with our session last week. So I wish you all good luck in the remainder of your session. I am really excited to be here and thankful to be a part of this conversation around New Mexico and the Outdoor Equity Fund. And our equity fund was established in 2019 alongside the creation of the Division of Outdoor Recreation. But before I speak on the successes of this program, I'd like to provide some context of how we got to where we are today, because I think that's really important. But before that, I will say I also love the outdoors, and I can say I'm a true testament to how transformative the outdoors can be, not just physically, but more importantly to mental health. Many of our youth here in New Mexico are struggling and have been struggling for many years. Our state ranks relatively low on a number of issues such as child poverty and quality of life. And so the Outdoor Equity Fund and investing in this concept is a tool that I believe helps to address the many systemic issues that are facing many of our young people. And so this was the mindset of a few of us moving into the summer of 2018 at the height of the New Mexico governor's race. There was a lot of conversation and discussion around turning the page around diversifying our economy, moving away from our dependence on extractive industries. And what I began to hear was a prioritization on tourism and the outdoor recreation. And while this conversation was fruitful, it was also very worrisome because I didn't believe we should necessarily be relying on tourism in New Mexico. If New Mexico had plans to expand outdoor recreation, many of us felt that we needed to do it in a way that was balanced and different from what other states in the West have done, and that we not only think about tourism, but that we also look at this as an opportunity for to become an economic driver in native and rural economies. And more importantly, we wanted outdoor recreation to be rooted in the philosophy of diversity, inclusion, and equity, working towards creating and harnessing a new generation of stewards of our land, one that honors its history and the generations who have lived here before us, and investing in youth who should have an opportunity to experience our beautiful outdoors. And so these principles led to us really pushing the governor that was elected eventually, which was Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham, who not only championed the creation of the Division of Outdoor Rec, but we were able to provide her the support that she needed to know that we couldn't have a division of outdoor recreation without centering equity in that. And so she was our champion for that legislation. We passed it through the legislature in 2019, and it's been in and it's been its inaugural year was in 2020. And a lot of what these principles led us to do was to partner with a number of organizations that worked around the state advocating for not only just the creation of the Outdoor Equity Fund, but to really amplify the principles that many in our movement have had, that have been fighting for a very long time. And it was just really beautiful to see our state legislative body committed to making a powerful and critical investment in our New Mexico youth. And so the first year it was initially approved by the legislature in 2019, it made a recurring commitment to provide grants to towns, cities, tribal and native communities, nonprofits, anyone who had a sole purpose to provide opportunities for low-income young people, an opportunity to spend time outside. And that fund allowed for private and corporate entities to donate their funds, which would help to expand the reach all over the state here in the state of New Mexico. 2020, as you all know, was our inaugural year. And despite the challenges that we faced in the pandemic and the awardees having to navigate that first year, it was relatively very, very successful. There was a number of folks who were awarded, and we saw the year 2020 provide a number of really great opportunities for young people to go outside in a way that was obviously very pandemic safe for the folks that were involved. And in the first year, it awarded a total of $261,863 to 25 programs, which were able to get approximately 2,700 kids outside. That same year, or in 2021, last year, the Outdoor Equity Fund awarded $898,337 to 57 programs throughout the state that will get nearly 22,000 youth outside throughout that period. Private sponsors were a part of that process. They were able to fund as well. Those private funders were the Wilderness Society, the North Face, and REI, who have invested alongside the state of New Mexico in this very innovative grant. 90 organizations applied to the Outdoor Equity Fund in 2021 with a total funding request of $1.2 million. That's to say that about 3.5 times the funding in 2021 versus the last, and reached more than 8 times as many youth, which was really, really exciting. That increase is many thanks to the leadership of the governor, who sees this whole project as just as critical as anything else, and being able to see such an investment is really important. I'll just finish by providing you all some with one last piece of information. This year, we'll be opening the 2022 cycle this spring with $3 million in funding. That's 3 times more than the last year. So I'm really excited about that. But the reason that I'm excited is because of the programs that exist and have been funded. One of the programs that's in my community, it's called Family Youth Incorporated. They're known for working with young people who have been dealt with a lot of really hard times, whether they faced issues with crime, things like that. They came about with this program called the Outdoor Legacy Project. And they provide resources and support to educate youth on conservation, climate, and cultural connectedness to the outdoors. They work to empower youth by providing innovative, quality outdoor experiences that promote a sense of ownership, relationship, and responsibility with regard to the land and natural resources. And it's exciting because from the moment that that Outdoor Legacy Project started to now, where I get to check in with them and find out where they're at, with it, they've been able to share so many stories about how their young people have been completely transformed. And I think that for those of us who do spend a lot of time outside, Like myself, as you can see, my bike's hanging. Like my bike for me is my therapy. Like that, being outside and really experiencing the outdoors is something that I think is truly what young people need. And I'm really, I congratulate you all for moving a step forward in actually creating urging your governor to create an actual office, because I think that is really, really important. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions when the time comes, and thank you for the time.
Thank you, Representative Rubio. Are there any questions from members before we move to the next person? Seeing or hearing none. Thank you again, Representative Rubio. Lee Hart, Alaska Outdoor Alliance. Please put your name on the record and begin your discussion. Yeah, you're muted. Lee, can you hear us? You're muted.
There you go. Yeah, now I'm not. It's a rookie error in Zoom land, isn't it? Sorry about that. But can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you fine.
Okay. So thank you so much for the opportunity to speak about my favorite topic, the outdoor recreation industry, and one of our industry's top priorities, equity and inclusivity. My name is Lee Hart, and I'm the executive director of the Alaska Outdoor Alliance, and we're dedicated to ensuring Alaska enjoys the best outdoor recreation economy in the world. Sorry, Senator, Representative Rubio. Anyway, I've worked in the outdoor bike, snow sports, and adventure travel industries for the majority of my career, and it's an industry based on personal passion, but one that also supports me and my lifestyle. On behalf of Alaska, we are also a founding member of the State Outdoor Business Alliance Network, which includes now 26 states where there are people like myself and the Alaska Outdoor Alliance doing similar work across the country. Before I talk about the Office of Outdoor Equity, I want to share the context with you about why it matters. As Representative Tarr mentioned, Alaska enjoys one of the strongest outdoor recreation economies in the United States, presently ranked 6th in the U.S. in terms of its share of our state's economic output. The U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis in 2020, the first year of the pandemic, found that Alaska's $2.3 billion outdoor recreation economy amounts to 3.2% of Alaska gross domestic product, 17,800 jobs again, even during the pandemic, which was 5.4% of jobs, and $981 million, or 3.4% of wages and compensation. And this is 33% less than 2019, which is no surprise since all manner of travel restrictions and health mandates made travel here nearly impossible, effectively crushing, in particular, are the guiding and outfitting slice of our economic sector. But beyond economic output, as has already been discussed, outdoor recreation is one of the most fun and cost-effective ways to achieve improved mental and physical health outcomes. There are numerous academic studies that demonstrate how time outside in nature can help mitigate depression and stress, combat obesity, heart disease, diabetes, and other chronic diseases, plus improve school test scores and foster better socialization skills and healthier life habits. With so much public land in Alaska and so many people in relatively close proximity to it, you might wonder why we need to focus on outdoor recreation and equity. And the reason is because access to the outdoors and outdoor activities is often beyond the reach of many of our children from our biggest cities and most remote villages. As you all well know, Article 1 in the Declaration of Rights in the Alaska Constitution says that all persons have a natural right to life, liberty, and I'll emphasize the pursuit of happiness and the enjoyment of the rewards of their own industry, and that all persons are equal and entitled to equal rights, opportunities, and protections under the law, and that all persons have corresponding obligations to the people and to the state. Well, one example of inequity of access can be found in Rep. Tarr's district. The Mountain View neighborhood is just 10 to 12 miles and mere minutes by car from either Hilltop or Arctic Valley ski area, yet kids in this neighborhood are hard-pressed to gain access to gear, transportation, and money for lift tickets. Programs like the nonprofit She Jumps try to fill these gaps to help get disabled and disadvantaged kids opportunities to enjoy the health, mental, and social benefits of outdoor sports, yet they struggle to make ends meet to find and loan gear, instructors, and transportation to get kids to wild places that are often just minutes from their home doorsteps. I think it should be part of an Alaska Children's Bill of Rights that no matter the color of your skin, socioeconomic background, or physical abilities, that would include the idea that Alaskans not just survive winter, but thrive in it. To know how to be safe, stay safe traversing avalanche-prone terrain, and places where ice isn't as thick as it was in their parents' time, and to have plowed streets and sidewalks to safely get to school and places of worship. Another place of inequity exists in access to resources to build outdoor recreation infrastructure. At the start of the pandemic, Alaska Outdoor Alliance conducted a survey to try to get a snapshot of the need for outdoor recreation infrastructure. We talked to communities from Nome to Ketchikan, our biggest cities to our smallest villages. And what we found was hundreds of millions of dollars of shovel-ready projects for things like a new covered ice rink in Nome, the Cinnabar Mountain Trail in Alaklik, a floatplane road in Igiagig, and small boat harbor improvements in several southeast and southwest communities. But what we also discovered was a widespread misconception, in particular in our rural communities, that some of the federal grant funds, like Land and Water Conservation Fund, they thought were only available for land acquisition, when in fact it's also available to provide matching funds for projects. So I wonder how many great projects that could benefit the visitor industry, strengthen local economies, and the health and well-being of Alaskans are languishing because communities didn't know about this and other federal grants administered by the state that can be used for such infrastructure. And beyond sheer dollars, what these communities need is better awareness of grant opportunities to help pay for such improvements, as well as the technical assistance. Sometimes they just don't have people power to make the time to write competitive grants that can, in some cases, provide anywhere from 50 to 80% of project funding needs. We're also taking a look at workforce development. And we've talked to leaders and professors within the University of Alaska system, Alaska Pacific University, and on-the-job training programs by organizations like SeaAlaska's Alaskan Youth Stewards and Anchorage Park Foundation Youth and Parks. And most recently, we've begun talks with Alaska State Department of Labor, all in the interest of gaining a better understanding of how to forge stronger connections between Alaska-based jobs and Alaska job seekers. Alaska and Alaskans would benefit from strengthening programs to ensure curriculum creates talent pipelines to meet the hiring demands of today's public land managers, fish and game scientists, trail builders, landscape designers, community planners, and others that create lifelong career pathways, as well as open opportunities to more small business development and the kind of uniquely Alaskan user-inspired innovation that has led to pioneering entire sports like fat biking, pack rafting, and creating thriving companies like Airframes Alaska with their Arctic oven tents and bush plane technologies. So as you've heard from New Mexico State Representative Rubio, these offices can be run on a relative shoestring, but deliver impressive results that can last generations. With an Office of Outdoor Equity, Alaska would have at least one person whose job it is to think, eat, and breathe about this every day, to break silos between divisions and departments that would help better leverage resources, and to forge the kinds of public-private partnerships that can grow these programs, put less of a financial burden on the state. And also, this office has in other states suggested administrative and policy improvements to make Alaska kids healthier, our state wealthier, and our collective future brighter. So thank you so much for allowing me to speak to this resolution that I hope you'll support. And I'm, of course, open to questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hart. Any questions from committee members for Ms. Hart? Seeing or hearing none. Ms. Rhodes, if you could please put your name on the record and give your presentation.
Hi, thank you. I'm Diana Rhodes. I'm the Community Engagement Director at the Anchorage Park Foundation. And I was hoping I could share my screen here and just have a couple of slides in support of HCR 4 today. Let me see if I can find it.
Yeah, it's...
Can you see it okay?
Yeah, it came up fine.
Okay. The Anchorage Park Foundation, I'll just move over to our philanthropic mission. We build healthy parks and healthy people by supporting parks and trails and recreational opportunities. We're a fundraising organization, so anytime there's opportunity for grants, for out to get new and diverse audiences into the outdoors, we are always looking for them. So an Office of Outdoor Equity would be fantastic. Outdoor equity includes just making our public lands more accessible, more affordable, and more safe. Programs that the Anchorage Park Foundation offers are along the equity lines are through our Trails Initiative. We have a Health on Trails program, Schools on Trails, where we work with Title I schools to get kids outside with their teachers, just learning their lessons outdoors. Any sort of lesson can be taken outdoors with the classroom, and our Schools on Trails program helps make that happen. What we've learned over the years, all the research shows, is that when kids take their lessons outside, they have better opportunities for learning. We have a Youth Employment in Parks program that allows, that works with 26 kids every summer with training in natural resources management. It's a 10-week program. They work on projects throughout the week. And then on Fridays, every Friday, we raise funds for an opportunity for those kids to spend time in an outdoor recreation activity. It's a wonderful program. We get funding from parents and families and individuals and government grants and other grants to support this program to get kids outside. Many times every year of the 26 kids that get chosen, a lot of times when we take them to even like Kincaid Park in Anchorage or down to Seward to go on a boat tour, it is the first time that they've been out on these outdoor recreation adventures. I mean, it's stunning every year to hear that from the kids, that they have just not had that access, or they haven't been able to afford it, or it just wasn't something that their family did. So that program constantly is amazing how many kids are getting into the outdoors with Youth Employment in Parks and learning new skills. And then we also have a program called Inclusive Play, which is working for making all of our playgrounds more accessible. And you wouldn't think about playgrounds necessarily as a priority for outdoor recreation. I'm just seeing, seems like it's not moving. Oh, here it is. Yes. So this image shows Jewel Lake Park. So Jewel Lake Park is one that just went in. We fundraised for using, we passed some park bonds, and then we fundraised for extra funds to make the playground inclusive with unitary surfacing is the number one for people in wheelchairs. Right now it's like the tiles are blue tiles, unitary surface tiles underneath the playground. I don't know if you remember looking at playgrounds and you see the wood chips. Often a playground is stuck on a pile of wood chips, and the wood chips are not accessible to people in a wheelchair at all. So oftentimes kids are left outside of play, not being able to participate when all of their friends are out there on the playground. We also have a program called the Dena'ina Indigenous Place Names Project. It's actually a project in partnership with the Native Village of Aklutna, where the president of the Native Village of Aklutna reached out to us and asked us if we could bring the indigenous place names to our parks and trails. Our first one that we've completed is at Chanchnu Muldoon Park. The name Chanchnu, there is no, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Chester. It's like along the Chester Creek. We call it Chester Creek, but come to do the research through the Native Village of Aklutna and find out that it was just a misrepresentation of the word Chanchnu, which was where Dena'ina people fished and lived right along Chanchnu Creek. It means grassy creek. The word means grassy creek. So this kind of information and reaching out to indigenous people of each region, having that Office of Outdoor Equity being a place where all of the different Native villages and people and cultures could have a place to go to have that these stories be told in our public lands. We're doing it in Anchorage with the Dena'ina, but it would be fantastic to see it happening all across the state. A previous job before I started at the Anchorage Park Foundation from 2015 to 2017, I worked for the National Park Service as a National Park Service Urban Fellow. And that program was about the National Park Service was having its 100-year anniversary of national parks, and they did the demographics of who is in our public lands, who goes to our national parks. And they had this huge effort and looked at it and found that 70% of people who visited our national parks were white. And often the demographics were much older. And just thinking about the demographics of the future, if we only have older white people in our national parks, the National Park Service was like, we got to do something differently. How can we reach out to new and diverse audiences so that we don't have national parks with nobody using them? I mean, there is that threat that if we're not reaching out to the next generation, are we going to have these public lands that are being used? And for all the reasons that the previous speaker spoke of, for health and for wellness and for, you know, all the things that we enjoy about our public, the outdoor recreation economy, we need a broad, diverse set of users. So what we did at that time was, you know, do surveys. Why aren't people using our public lands? And it's often just a very simple reason. They don't see themselves represented. And if you're not seeing yourselves represented, then you don't feel safe. They don't seem safe, and they don't seem accessible if you don't see yourself in it. So in the work that I was doing at that time in Tucson, Arizona, at Saguaro National Park, we worked really hard to get the Latino community was the largest community in Tucson. And so we worked really hard to get Latinos hired at the National Park Service so that people would see themselves represented even when they came in the doors to go to the national park. And then also did specialized tours for Latinos and their families in the national park system. So again, reaching these new and diverse audiences makes our state a more accessible place for all. And it just makes sure that you have that next generation of park and public land users. At that time, in that period, 2017, they also recognized, wait, what are we doing in the National Park Service? We're actually giving away free passes to anybody who turns 65. You get a free pass into the national parks. And we're like, wait, why are we only giving free passes to senior citizens? Let's think about this. And so they started that program to get the Every Kid in a Park is what it was first called, where fourth graders and their families could go to national parks for free. And now they've expanded that. In 2019, they expanded it to all public lands, not just national parks. So it's Every Kid Outdoors for the fourth graders and their families to get into the parks. So that was an amazing program that continues today. And just the last slide, another grant opportunity that we had from the National Recreation and Parks Association. If our Office of Outdoor Equity had grants, we would definitely apply. One that we had was, again, National Outdoor Recreation. And we did surveys with the Alaska Native Heritage Center and the Refugee Assistance Program of what people would like to see in their public lands. And they, a lot of just cultural resources from all the surveys, the focus groups that we did cultural surveys. They wanted to, again, see themselves reflected, but also just making it easier. So on this one, we did a, with the refugee assistance volunteers, we did a walking course where you had written out how far it was, how many steps it was, kind of the safety factors for getting outside on this section of the Chester Creek Trail so that they better understood. And then we had a couple of different walking events where people got outside and had healthy snacks at the end. And so people really enjoyed that time. And so anyway, we support it. If you have any questions about what the Anchorage Park Foundation is doing for outdoor equity or how we can help in anything, any of these different kinds of programs, please let me know.
Thank you, Ms. Rhodes. Any questions for the folks from invited testimony from the committee? Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. Good to see you, Ms. Rhodes. This is Representative Hannon. Here in Juneau, one of the things the Juneau School District has done for over 20 years to try and attempt to get kids outdoors is provide hunter safety training for all sixth graders. And they do the classroom work at their middle school, and then if you pass the paperwork test, you go to the range and shoot a weapon. And, you know, sort of under the auspices of most kids are going to be in a household, whether it's their own household or some other household, there's going to be a gun. So hunters, you know, whether you're ever a hunter or not, learning safety protocols is good. And we also do a learn to ski for all fourth graders. I'm wondering if the Anchorage, you know, and scaling programs to fit local needs is the issue. Whether the Anchorage School District has attempted that, have any of those kind of learn about outdoor activities programs integrated into the school system, or whether it's just not scalable there with, you know, I can think of the two shooting ranges in Anchorage, and certainly parts of Anchorage schools would have where it's not going to take a whole month commitment to do it, but I don't know if the Anchorage Parks Foundation has looked at any of the school-integrated programs to do increased outdoor recreation knowledge, because you teach a kid, then they take their parents.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much for the question. We work with the Anchorage School District on our Schools on Trails program, where we get kids outside, and then we also have this, what's called the Anchorage Outdoor School. I have not participated in any or know of any hunting lessons with the Anchorage School District. Ours is more, the program that we work on is with getting them outside and then learning about integration into nature and, you know, trees and snow and all the different things you can do outdoors and the science behind it. We work with the school district on that effort.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rhodes. Representative Fields.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. More just a comment. Definitely support this. And I just observed that as the state parks have been pressured to sustain themselves, the price of just going to a trailhead has priced out poor families in Anchorage. $5 per visit, $60 for a season. You're not going to, a poor family's not going to spend that much money when the trade-off is food. So we need to find a way of allowing poor families to use our state parks for free, in my view, for something as basic as hiking. And the representative mentioned cabins, you know, public use cabins now cost as much as a hotel much of the year in Anchorage. And I can pay that. I don't mind paying that. I don't think most upper middle class families mind paying. But we have to have a way for those cabins to be accessible to families of all means. So we need an income scaled program. And that's something that an Office of Outdoor Equity could coordinate. And such an office could look, you know, beyond the very simple purview of trailheads and cabins. So just wanted to support it and say that I've certainly noticed this this problem with the lack of access just in Anchorage. And I'm sure there are many other permutations of it across the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fields. Any other questions from committee members? Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. Representative Rubio, nice to see you with us from New Mexico, and
I had the pleasure of being in New Mexico for the Council of State Legislatures in the fall, and it was, you have a truly beautiful Capitol building, and there are a lot of similarities of between New Mexico and Alaska, certainly not in our ecology, but in our mindset of what we're doing. And I'm wondering, has your Office of Outdoor Equity, are you focused on youth education programs or more just diversity and equity issue? Or is that not an element that you bifurcated over?
Thank you. No, thank you, Representative. I will, first of all, I'm glad you were able to make it to the Capitol. I'm glad I'm not there right now, but yes, it is a beautiful building. In terms of the Outdoor Equity Fund, it is specifically targeting, programs that are focused solely on youth and programming that will take young people outdoors. I think what makes it a big, the piece around equity and looking at, particularly having young people who are representative of communities that don't necessarily have a ton of money. Those are the types of programs that are prioritized. And so there's programming all over the state, programs that exist all over the state that anyone that is providing a service to youth and getting them outside can apply to this program. But I think the programs that actually get awarded are the ones that really structure their programming around making sure that young people who are more at who need a lot of the support, in terms of needing the resources to get outside is a priority.
Great. And one follow-up, Representative Pakataka. This is mostly for us. So I had a career as a high school teacher. One of my favorite former students, who was one of my student council kids for 4 years, is now at the University of Las Cruces as a PhD in wildlife. And one of her projects is the reintroduction of ptarmigan, which this shows my Alaskan ignorance. I thought we had all the ptarmigan in the world, but it turns out there are other species of ptarmigan, and there's a reintroduction to New Mexico ptarmigan project that's out of Las Cruces University, but by a born and raised Alaskan. So we have lots of ties, even if the bird species are just slightly different from each other.
That's awesome.
Thank you, Representative Hannon, and thank you, Representative Rubio. Any other questions or comments from committee members? Seeing or hearing none, we'll pivot over to public testimony now. Public testimony is now open for HCR 4. I'd like to ask those testifying to please state their name, their residency, and any affiliation. And please keep your testimony 2 minutes if you can. Leo, am I seeing only Ryan O'Shaughnessy? Okay. Mr. O'Shaughnessy, if you could please put your name on the record and begin your public testimony. You have 2 minutes.
Hi. My name is Ryan O'Shaughnessy. I'm the Executive Director of TrailMex Incorporated. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to call in and offer our support for HCR4 and the creation of an Office of Outdoor Equity. TrailMex is a nonprofit that maintains and improves the Juneau Trail system, and we recognize the stewardship of the Tlingit, including the Ntaku Kwans, on whose land we live, work, and recreate. Our organization was founded in 1993 by a group of volunteers after a need was identified by a CBJ, City and Board of Juneau, planning process that called for coordination amongst the many land managers on whose land our trails cross. In 1998, we were able to hire our first paid staff, and we now typically employ anywhere from 15 to 20 folks during the summer season to work on our trails. During the summer of 2020, we ran a workforce development program with CARES funding called the COVID-19 Conservation Corps. And I believe that the creation of an Office of Outdoor Equity would facilitate further workforce development programs and spur community-level economic revitalization along with it. These
kinds of programs would provide Alaskans who are unemployed or underemployed a job, as well as training to help advance their careers while maintaining and improving access to Alaska's public lands and creating lasting outdoor infrastructure that supports the visitor economy, attracting both cruise ship and independent visitors. Trail building in general is entry-level work that doesn't require higher education, only a willingness to learn, but it allows people to gain technical skills, trades experience, and an introduction to fields like construction, carpentry, landscaping, and natural resource management. There's a lot of other things that come along with that, like group problem solving, communication, team, and there's a lot of teamwork involved, which builds tons of interpersonal skills that are also necessary for a worker's success in any field. In our programming with the COVID-19 Conservation Corps, we spent significant time and money on training, which provided tangible skills and certifications for employees to take with them to other jobs and was also necessary to accomplish the work that we had at hand. This focus on training also is one way to decrease barriers for entry for people with underrepresented identities in the field, like Indigenous people, people of color, women, and members of the LGBTQS+ community. Workforce development programs for trails and natural resource stewardship can also expand beyond the skills needed in the field to include community consultation, planning, and design. And those kinds of things mean training for workers to do things like understand and plan for the interplay between outdoor recreation, tourism, cultural, and substance use, which is essential in Alaska. These kinds of programs can also help folks have a skill set for the pre-construction skills related to trail building and outdoor recreation infrastructure. Planning, permitting, surveying, grant writing are all essential to this kind of work. With these thoughts, I urge the committee to consider the Office of Outdoor Equity as an opportunity to build a reliable, homegrown workforce that would expand outdoor access across the state, especially in rural and under-resourced communities. When we invest in trails, we invest in Alaska people, land, and economy. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. O'Shaughnessy. Leo, can you clarify there's nobody else online? Okay. With that, we'll close public testimony. We'll set the resolution aside today and pick it back up next Friday if timing allows. Amendments to the resolution are due to my office by Thursday, March 3 at 1 p.m. The folks online who took the time out of their day to come speak on behalf of supporting this resolution, I show my gratitude to you and Representative Tarr for bringing this resolution forward. Would you like to say anything in closing? Okay, that's all. Well, with that, the committee is now adjourned at 2 p.m.